Right, I have been, as Dave said, I have been sort of brewing this for a while, this talk about forgiveness and stuff. I've really felt that I wanted to talk about forgiveness. And I've also put in and bitterness because you'll find out a little bit later that something sort of sideswiped me with this personally. And I felt that actually it has quite a bit to do with forgiveness as well. So I've slipped that in as well. It wasn't the first intention. In fact, it goes back to the autumn when I was really thinking about forgiveness, and Simon Burley did... is Simon in here?
Yeah,
there you are. Simon did a talk. It was just after Armistice Day. It was actually on the day then. And I sat there, and he talked about forgiveness, and I thought, that's the talk I wanted to do, really. I thought it was a really good timing there. I felt that we needed to hear that at the time. And in fact, I've got a couple of things I just want to remind you today from Simon's talk, because I thought they were really, really very good. But I do like to be interactive, really, because I just think that we got to sort of wrestle through what about forgiveness, because as I've sort of delved into it, it sounds all very easy in some respects because, you know, well, Jesus... forgiveness of sins and stuff like that, and you think, yes, well, that's the Christian sort of thing. But when you start to unpack this word forgiveness and actually where it applies and how it applies and to which bits of our lives and so on, and I know you'll say, well, it's all of our lives, but you know, how does it actually work out, and in which direction does it go, and does it come back to us? It becomes a little bit more complicated, I think, and a little bit more in depth. So, just taking it as a human being, my first question to you really is why should we forgive? Why? Of course, I'm asking the question, I'm just giving you some time here, but I actually find forgiving people quite difficult sometimes. When it really matters, and I've really got annoyed, and something's really got me, I find it really quite hard to forgive, but why should we? And I have got a bit of a list, but I just wanted you to turn to somebody next to you, maybe, and just sort of try and get at least a couple of reasons why we might actually bother actually making the effort to forgive one another or, you know, receive forgiveness or whatever. Why should we do that? Because I've got to get your brains ticking over. So you've got to start to think, why should we bother to forgive? Okay? So just turn to somebody who's next to you and sort of see if you can suss out that, and we'll just see where you go. Have you answered it? What? Okay, that's good, yeah, right. Okay. Okay. I know it's not long, but I've got quite a bit to get through, so. So, anybody want to actually just... Nigel.
All right, okay. The first one is, it's good for us. The analogy is... which actually fits well with lancing of oil.
Yeah, it's good for us.
You get a oil.
That's great. Okay, anybody got any other answers?
Just being unforgiven?
Yeah. Yeah, anything else? Anyone?
To preserve friendship.
Pardon?
To preserve friendship.
Yeah.
Stop us becoming bitter.
Yeah. I'll just... Okay, yeah.
Well,
hold on. Barra?
It makes you and the forgiving person feel better.
Yeah, okay. Feel better. Between people. Okay.
Yeah,
Roy?
That says forgive so that we may also be...
Okay, so that's sort of linked in with this one, yeah? Because we are forgiven, we should forgive, yeah? Okay.
Protects our hope.
Right. Okay, anything else? Okay. All right, well, you've done a lot better than I have, because I've got only a couple of them. But
the extra one about avoiding bitterness.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Second one, which you were going to let somebody else do.
Yeah. What did you say, Julie?
To prevent.
Prevent.
Preserve friendship to stop bitterness.
Stop bitterness.
Yeah.
Apart from anything else, it's lovely linking to the rest of your talk.
Thanks for that, Nigel. I hadn't, you know, I really hadn't noticed. Okay. I've got this picture here. This is how I view forgiveness. Okay. Now there are two pictures at the top, and there are two pictures at the bottom, and I have a mental image for relationships that work like this. So if the relationship is not going well, okay, it's like the top two. So you've got a rusty chain, or you've even got the chain on a sprocket there. It's all rusty, it's all jammed up. It takes a huge amount of effort if things are not going well in a relationship, if you aren't forgiving, and things sort of jam up, slow down, there's a lot more effort, it's sort of blood, sweat and tears to get things moving. Whereas if you use a drop of oil, the whole thing looks better, it works properly, it's much easier, the whole thing operates. That's just my mechanical mind that says you've got to have some oil in between two moving parts. Otherwise the two moving parts eventually heat up and slow down and eventually would seize and just nothing would happen, they wouldn't work. And I think that's my view of, you know, a simple view of a relationship, really. And you guys have sort of cracked that with all of the answers, really. Simon's talk mentioned two people. He used two people to show the difference between forgiveness and, you know, and not forgiving. And this lady, Corrie ten Boom, was in the Holocaust. She was in a concentration camp, and German guards... I won't say looked after her, but made sure that they stayed there and stuff like that. And part of Simon's talk was is that one time when Corrie, after the war, was speaking in Berlin, she saw one of the guards after she'd spoken, and the guard came up and asked her to forgive him for the things that he'd done whilst she'd been in the camp. And she took a moment or two, really, to really consider that. And in the end, or... I would say in the end, I don't know how long that would have taken, she said, yes, I forgive you. And Simon told us that she felt the real presence of God at that moment. I should imagine the guard also felt some release too, because he obviously had felt guilty about the thing. And that's the only picture I could find, really, but it's a... Jesus' light is stronger than the biggest darkness, and of course that sort of thing. Now, he also mentioned about this chap, who I grew up with, you know, on the telly, Patrick Moore. And some of you won't know Patrick Moore, but the monocle sort of stood him out. He was stars at night on TV, he was a great chap and so on, very knowledgeable and a really good TV presence, and an incredibly talented guy in all sorts of ways. He composed music and did all sorts of different things. And eventually, though, I found out where Simon got his information from, because he'd looked on Wikipedia, because I did too, just to find out, found the story. And apparently, when he was a young chap in the war, he was engaged, or he was in love with this nurse, who actually, she was driving the ambulance in London, was hit by a bomb, she was killed, and he never... And his comment about doing romance or having a relationship later to that was, no, it just wasn't to be, and that's that. But actually, Simon sort of was saying, it seems that he got a bit embittered at that point because he really could not forgive the Germans at all. And in fact, right up until about 7 months before his death, he was really quite caustic about the Germans and worried about what they might do in Europe and so on and so forth. And, it was really quite an embittered sort of view. And so the guy, you know, that was the way he was. I don't know how it affected him any more than that, but that was the illustration. Oh, now what have we got? I've got to remember. As I'm just moving on a little bit now. One of the things that we haven't really said, although we've said it's because we're forgiven, one of the things that Jesus did was that he actually showed us the way of forgiveness. Okay, so he didn't just, not just the cross, but also he taught about it and he showed us the way. So I've got a couple of examples of that. And one is the woman caught in adultery. You know that there was this situation where the Pharisees try to catch out Jesus and they say, look, this woman's caught in adultery. The law says she ought to die. And Jesus just writes in the sand or something and waits for the oldest ones first disappear. And he says the first one who's sinned, who hasn't sinned, can cast the first stone or something like that. And they all troop off and he's just left with the woman. And basically, okay, Carol, are you a bit bored?
Yeah, really bored.
Yes, it's all right. Well, it's just, she told me earlier she was going to go out, so I thought I'd make her think of it. Sorry. where was I now? Oh, yeah, so he just forgives the woman. He just forgives this woman and says, look, don't do it anymore. I'm not going to condemn you. Off you go. So even in his, you know, when he's being tried to be entrapped by various people, he still forgives. The paralyzed man, I don't know if you remember that paralyzed man. I'm not sure. There's several paralyzed men that Jesus healed. But there was one where he actually says, he's done the healing. The guy's walking around. The Pharisees have a little bit of a go at him. And he says, well, what's easier? He says, is it to heal or to say your sins are forgiven? And I just think to myself, oh, hang on. I'm thinking about forgiveness and there's a healing going on here. Something's going on with this whole concept of forgiveness that Jesus has and stretching out his hand and healing people. And he's demonstrating in a healing forgiveness because he actually links it. I don't really understand the link, to be honest with you, but he certainly links it. Your sins are forgiven. I could have said, your sins are forgiven, and then he would have got up and walked. Or I just say, get up and walk, and he gets up and walks. So Jesus is demonstrating again that, you know, forgiveness is the way of Jesus. That's the thing I'm trying to sort of engage myself. That if we're disciples of Jesus, then we are going to follow in his way. And we are going to have a way of forgiving. We are going to follow that way of just being a forgiving sort of people. The other thing I felt, I've got another image, which is of two people walking hand in hand down the road, yeah? And one is called love and the other's called forgiveness, and I don't think they can actually come apart. Because if you love somebody, you forgive them, and if you're forgiving people, you're demonstrating love to them. They're two linked, but they're also linked in a different way, which is this. So I remember hearing very early on from a guy called Eric Delve, who apparently is still alive, down in Kent somewhere, because Dave Sandberg mentioned him a couple of weeks ago. He's a vicar somewhere. But he was the evangelist who really helped me connect with God for the very, you know, for the first sort of time. And he said, love isn't just a romantic feeling or whatever, but it's actually an act of the will. Now, to back that up, Jesus clearly didn't want to go to the cross, because he said, Lord, he prays, doesn't he? He says, if this cup can pass from me, then let it happen, you know, because I don't want to die, but, you know, I will do what you want me to do for the love of, you know, for the love of the people. So love is an act of the will, and it walks hand in hand with forgiveness, and forgiveness is also an act of the will. So I just wanted to sort of bung that in there, really, because I think that the two sort of are linked. Now, I might have some other questions. Hold on a second. I've just got to... Yes. Interesting little question here. It's about the cost of forgiveness. I've got to ask you this question, so you're going to have to just have a talk with somebody about this. Now, I've got two questions. They're both related. It's about the cost of forgiveness. So what does it cost you when you forgive someone? And what does it cost you when you don't? Okay, so I think it's quite a hard question, but it's certainly, if we looked at Jesus, we'd say that Jesus, it cost Jesus to forgive us. Yeah? But how does it cost, what does it cost us to forgive? Or does it? I think that's quite a hard question, which is why I'm asking you. And I think the easier one is, what does it cost if we don't forgive? Because Julie's already given us a bit of a heads up on that, so with about the bitterness thing. But at the same time, I think you need to explore that a little bit more. So I'm going to give you a minute and a half, you know, just very quickly, just to work out what you can get out of that. What does it cost you to forgive? What does it cost you not to forgive? You can forgive me later. Right. I know the teams are doing good on this. How are the rest of you doing? Have we got any answers? I've just talked to a couple of the teams at the front here, and they have been very clear about this, and I think it's really good. Now, where's that other pen gone? There we are. So, David, go on then, tell us. Can you tell, or Joel?
Basically, so if someone's really, truly sorry, then you've kind of got power over them unless you forgive them.
Okay, so did you hear that? If somebody's really sorry and you don't forgive them, you're holding power over them because you're not releasing them. As soon as you forgive them, you give away that power. So actually, he's saying that the cost of forgiveness is power. Yeah. Isabella?
I think the cost of forgiveness is like you're giving away part of yourself, and when you don't forgive, you're losing part of yourself. So they're kind of similar but different.
Okay, so you're giving away part of yourself.
Not physical, like, I'm not really sure how to explain it.
No, it's quite difficult, isn't it? But yeah, I think probably did everybody hear that? It's giving away something of yourself, but actually she's not quite sure how to explain that. And can anybody else explain it? Has anybody got a better way of...
Things like rights, or your feeling for having whatever was wronged justified. Pride, yeah. It fits in with that power as well. The feeling of power over... the person that wronged you.
Okay, so I'm just noting those words there. Feeling, feelings, rights, pride.
Andy talked to in certain situations, you have a loss of face, or people, you know, how can you forgive this person because of what they've done to you? So.
Yeah. Okay.
Vulnerability.
In line with the loss of face, a similar one of the impression that you're condoning the action.
Okay.
Which also fits with part of yourself.
Yeah. So Jesus ran that risk with the woman of adultery. Sort of, other people would accuse him of saying, well, adultery's okay then. And of course, Jesus wasn't saying that, but he runs the risk of being accused. Okay, yeah. What about the cost of not forgiving? Is it just bitterness? And that's it? Okay, go on, Isabella.
It also costs part of yourself because you lose a part of yourself. Whereas with forgiving, you give a part of yourself away, whereas with not forgiving, you lose a part of yourself.
I wonder if with losing, what... maybe, Isabella, is a part of you still attached to that person because you're holding on to what they've done to you.
Okay.
So you're not free to...
Let's hold on to that. Not free, that's... I'm just going to, for the sake of...
Family feuds and things.
Okay. Can we just go feuds?
Yeah.
Because it might go wider than family, might not. Sorry, David, yeah?
Guilt.
Yep.
If you look at the servant who didn't forgive his fellow servant, you know, even though he was forgiven by the king, because he lost everything, because he was put into jail.
Okay. So you can lose... I'll put or more. You can lose part of yourself or more. Lose more things, can't you? You can lose stuff. Yeah.
With part of self-integrity, your own sort of sense of gentleness, humility, and personalities go out the window.
Loss of integrity. I know,
I've
got
there's
that.
There's no resolution as such. You don't actually come to an end of it.
No end. Yeah. Okay. Except that's the end of the paper. So we'll stop there. We'll stop there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've been back to Rachel's bit and where Isabel was coming from. It would be things like gentleness, compassion, acceptance, the gentler sides of emotions or your character that you're losing out on. And
right.
Building up the
yeah.
The harder things, the aggression.
Yeah.
The,
yeah. What, there's a phrase that I found in my research, which apparently a lot of counsellors and stuff use, which is that if you don't forgive somebody, what you're doing is you're drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. And I wish it had been in Scripture, really. It would be quite useful, wouldn't it? It probably is in a certain sort of a sense. You know, Jesus is fairly clear about forgiveness, I suppose. But that was quite an interesting one, really, isn't it? That you're drinking the poison whilst you're hoping that somebody else is going to die from it. Obviously, it's ridiculous, but that's where it's at. Now, I just want to go through a bit about forgiveness from the biblical point of view, because Jesus' way of forgiveness, actually, there's a lot. When you look on the web or you look at psychologists or counsellors and stuff, they tend to miss out this first bit, which is about the fact that we are in the wrong to begin with. In terms of the Bible, we call it sin, our mistakes, our habits, or our ways of doing things. And we get forgiveness, and it's already been mentioned this morning, we are forgiven, you know, that's why we become Christians, you know, we accept the forgiveness of God. So the way of Jesus is that we get forgiven. And we have to look at our own individual ways, habits and mistakes. And I've put in brackets, be holy. You'll see where that comes in later. It's a reference to Hebrews 12. The next lot is that we actually start to use forgiveness. And we've talked mostly at the moment about it with other people's ways and their habits and their mistakes. Okay, and that's where we're talking a lot at the moment about forgiveness and how unforgiving people or not forgiving people and being bitter with them and whatever. Okay, and in Hebrews 12, it talks about living at peace with them. And then the third thing is, well, I've put this really, is what life throws at us. Because there's a few curveballs, I think, that life throws at us that aren't to do with people's mistakes or their habits particularly, but it's just life. So, for instance, when I looked up the word bitterness, I discovered that people can be quite bitter. Or it's a bitter experience to experience somebody dying in, you know, that is close to you. Okay, now that's what I mean by what life throws at you. But there are other things that happen that aren't particularly the fault of anybody, any one individual or whatever, that just throw you a curveball. And I do want to talk about that a little bit later. So we're sort of looking at that now. When we get forgiven as a Christian, what do you think to this? Because I think that somehow the evangelical Christianity bit has said, well, look, you are a sinner. Jesus died on the cross for your sins. If you accept this, you get forgiveness of sins. And so therefore, you know, you're now a Christian and you're a new creation. Holy Spirit comes to reside in you. I've not got a problem with that. But I think there's something bundled in there that a lot of other people talk about, which we as Christians are a bit afraid of doing, which is actually forgiving ourselves. Now, that how a lot of psychologists will talk about forgiving ourselves. Okay, and I actually think that forgiving yourself is actually bundled up in accepting the forgiveness of God for the mistakes that you have made. What do you think? Anybody disagree with that? It's probably easier to. I can see one or two people nodding. So, oh, you're shaking your head, Andy. Is that? You don't disagree, right? Okay. Thank you. All right, because forgiving yourself when you've made mistakes. This is the way that, you know, people who are not Christians necessarily would say it's really important to forgive yourself. Very important to do that, so that you actually can move forward and that you're released to move forward like that. What, as Christians, though, I think we have is that, you know, you become realize that you're weighed down with sin, or that you are making mistakes, or that the way that you go about your life isn't as good as it could be. And so then you say, okay, well, I can see that Jesus has done that, and so therefore I'll accept that as being a way forward. Oh, that means that I was wrong, but now I'm considered as though I'm not, and I've got to work on that. Does that make sense? It does roll. I think it rolls together. Okay. Now, the next little bit is, I came across this, I don't know if you watched this, I watched a sci-fi film the other night. It was really quite a good film, actually. I don't normally sit down, never sit down. If it says sci-fi, I will never sit down and watch it, okay? But I happened to, I know there are people who are into it, so. But I got caught up with it, really, and it was called The World's End. And all I won't bore you with the detail of the film because it's not really relevant, but there was a moment, it was almost like the last, this week, while I've been preparing to talk about forgiveness and bitterness, there have been a number of different things that have flicked up through the week about forgiveness. It's almost like God's been saying, yes, Andy, it's a good thing to talk about. Yes, talk about it. It'll be fine. Yeah, I want to keep your mind focused on it all through the week. And here we were on Friday night, and I think it was Friday night, and on the wall behind these two guys who were talking about whatever they were talking about was this phrase, which is written by Alexander Pope in the Essay to Criticism. I found that out later. I didn't notice it. It says, to err is human, and to forgive is divine. And I just sort of thought, oh, that's interesting. What does that mean? Because I actually, if you read it just as it is, you'd say, well, okay, all humans make mistakes and God can forgive, and that's that. But actually, when I read about it, it doesn't, the saying doesn't carry just that meaning. But it actually is also saying that when we as humans forgive, we are becoming godlike. And I thought, because we are taking on the character of God, because God forgives and humans make mistakes. But when we as humans forgive another human, we're actually taking on the image of God at that point and going his way. And I thought, oh, that actually is really saying, be a disciple of Jesus. So we all know that we make mistakes. We all know that God forgives. But here we are in the middle, dodging between the two bits, but occasionally we're showing that we're like Jesus. So I'll just sort of throw that in for you. So, now, just whilst we're talking about the way of Jesus, I don't know if I've got another, hold on, let's just see what my next picture is. Oh yeah, there we go. That's it. We don't need to bother with that. Oh, I'll talk about that in a moment, but I'll leave that ship up there for a minute. There's a reason for that. How are we doing for time? Yeah, we're okay. So, if we are disciples of Jesus, and we're supposed to be forgiving, okay, Peter actually had this happen once. Peter was there. Jesus said, I need to wash your feet. And Peter says, no, I'm not having you do that. And then Jesus says, no, I've got to do it. And Peter says, no, you're not. They have a little argument, and in the end, of course, Jesus wins. I mean, when doesn't he? But Jesus, Peter says, well, if you're going to wash me, wash all of me. And Peter, Jesus says, well, actually, you've had a bath. You just need your feet washing. All right. Now, we don't live in a culture like that. We live in a culture where actually it's not our feet that get dirty, but it's our hands that get dirty. So the image that I've got for you is that this is. I wrote this down because I know that different people have different habits, but spiritually intelligent people have a shower between 1 and 7 times a week. Okay, 1 and 7. So some of you may only shower once a week. Some of you may shower once a day. Some may do it more, I don't know. But you do wash your hands a lot more often. Yeah, because it's your hands that are getting dirty. And as Christians, we need to develop a healthy habit of forgiving quickly. Before things take hold and become more difficult. So if you've got, when you're washing your hands this week, just have a little think about the fact that you're washing your hands. It might just help you to remember that I've got to forgive quickly, I've got to do that. So because we do that with our bodies, we wash the bodies that get dirty. And if we have a little altercation, I had one this morning, my life seems to be, you can imagine, there's only me and Philippa in the house, so you can imagine who the altercation is with. I have to apologise. And she says, well, I will forgive you, well, maybe in a few days, you know, just as a joke, because she knew I was talking about forgiveness. I then actually thought, crumbs, I spend most of my life apologising for things that I do wrong. But anyway, so, you know, we have to get along in doing that. And Philippa, of course, is caught out at that point, you realise, because I've said sorry, and she knows that I'm trying to make amends of the relationship. So she's really called upon to forgive me. But actually, I had that moment where I thought to myself, I've apologised and we've had that little joke, but does she really forgive me? You know, because we'd had the joke. Do you know what I mean? And I was just thinking, is she really going to forget it or not? And actually, I realised it's like your point about power. Philippa had the power, you know, at that point to sort of... And you're just thinking, yeah, I'm just left in this position. Anyway, hopefully Phil will listen to the download, though it's very unlikely. So I'll have to tell her later. but if she forgives me quickly, it's probably better for us, really. Okay. Right, that's that bit done. Now, I can't tell you who I spoke to this week, but I did speak to somebody not in Dayspring. And the ship is really quite important. Because they were explaining to me a situation where they'd argued with somebody and they'd had this big barney on the Monday and it hadn't really got resolved in any sort of sense until the Wednesday. But by the Wednesday, this person said to me, I did actually say I forgave them. But it still rumbled on through the week. And it wasn't till Sunday that I felt that it was sort of sorted out. And I said to them, I said, you did forgive on the Wednesday. And it was like turning the rudder on the ship. So the ship's going in a particular direction. On the Wednesday, you turned the rudder on the ship. But being an oil tanker, it is a huge... It looks quite small there, but they are pretty big. It takes a while for things to respond, and so do we. So we have to, like this, you know, forgiveness is an act of the will. The act of the will happened on the Wednesday, but it wasn't until Sunday before she felt the ship was turning to, you know, the other direction or the direction that she wanted. So I think we're all a bit like that. Sometimes I know that there was a situation in my life, probably 30 years ago now, where I'd really fallen out with somebody, and we weren't actually in the same part of the country because I'd moved to Wiltshire, and but there was still something eating away with me, like Julie said about the bitterness thing. It had really sort of got a hold of me, and I had to forgive this person. And I remember that I thought, when I write the letter, I'll feel better. And then I didn't, and I closed the letter up, put it in the envelope. And I thought, when I post the letter, I'll feel better. And I didn't. And I walked back down the road from the letterbox to the house. And I thought, I don't feel any better about this. And then I just had to get on with life. And it was about 2 or 3 weeks later. I never heard from the person. I know they received the letter, but I never heard from them, you know, during that time. But it was 2 or 3 weeks later that I thought about it. I thought, oh, it's all gone. And it was sort of, you know, that's the sort of speed of things that happen. Right, I want to talk about bitterness. I've got a little bit of time on this, and the ship's still really important. I got a bit sideswiped by this about the bereavement issue, okay? You can get bitter about bereavement, and I think I have. And I view it like I'm sailing along, and I'm going in a particular direction, but this wind starts to blow and I don't really notice it because it's just generally it's windy anyway, perhaps, but this wind starts to blow and I've gradually gone off course. And I think that's, for me, that's how bitterness has sort of grown. It actually talks in Hebrews about being holy, living at peace with everybody, and staying in the grace of God. Okay? And being holy, set apart, and also trying to be perfect, that's something that we're called to do as Christians. Living at peace, we've talked about with forgiveness. But staying in the grace of God, okay, actually says don't fall short of the grace of God. And I've actually tried to reword that as staying long in the grace of God. So instead of, you know, we always say, oh, we all fall short of the grace of God, or the, yeah? Well, instead of falling short, what about staying long? Yeah? So what about actually, instead of saying, oh, we might fall short, what about actually aiming to stay long in the grace of God? So for me, that's quite an important issue, that we actually try to do that. But what does it mean, staying in the grace of God? It's a very good question, isn't it? Really, how does that do that? Because this wind, over the last 2-3 years, and I would say, well, maybe even longer, really, with my dad's death about 5 years ago, I've got, let's just look up bitterness, because it's, there are three, if something's bitter, it can taste bitter physically, okay? These are the meanings of bitterness. There's this objective sense, it's an objective sense of cruel, biting words, okay? So that's the obvious one, that people, you know, hurt you, and you can be bitter about cruel, biting words. It's intense misery from forsaking God, from a, perhaps from a life of sin or impurity. And then these other ones. The misery of servitude. I think, crumbs. Downton Abbey. You know, it doesn't come over in Downton Abbey too much, does it? But there are one or two of the guys downstairs who are quite miserable about losing their freedom and only being able to serve all of the time. So being a slave or being a servant when you don't want to be is quite miserable, okay? And also the misfortunes of bereavement. They sort of hit me quite hard, really. And then there's even more. This is more of a subjective thing, and I think this is where it becomes difficult, because it says bitter and bitterness describe the emotions of sympathy. Well, we all can be sympathetic for different situations, can't we? So being sympathetic is fine, but actually having the emotions of sympathy, it can go wrong. So we have to sort of watch out for it. The sorrow of childlessness and of penitence. I'm not quite. What does penitence mean, by the way? Anybody? The sorrow of penitence. Like, anybody got?
It's like you have to then do something to make it better. Like if you're penitent, you're like, oh, let me give you a present. Let me make it better.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Okay. Of disappointment. And the feeling of misery and wretchedness giving rise to bitter tears. So it's pretty horrible to talk about bitterness, to be honest with you, because it's pretty horrible. And being bitter isn't a nice thing. So here's the Hebrews 12 thing. Make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many. So in the first two lines, you've got the individual bit and living with other people. Being holy is our own responsibility. And living at peace with everyone is also our own responsibility, but it's with other people, yeah? And together, of course, we end up being holy together. And then falling short of the grace of God. Anybody got any ideas about how you stay long in the grace of God when life throws nasty things at you? Keep forgiving. Okay. So how, okay, this is my question, because I have been there, okay. Oh, Roy, you've got a point before I...
I don't quite understand that. It's the grace of God. It's by grace means it's given to you. You don't have to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand how we can make sure someone stays in the grace of God.
I think we can do it by the power of the Holy Spirit, don't
we? Okay.
Or is it a case of not walking away from it? So you've got the grace that's given to you, and it's a case of staying with the grace that you've been given rather than just walking away thinking this isn't working.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think also in situations you need to ask for God's grace. So I ask for God's grace in bringing up my kids and things, and in certain situations you might need to say, Lord, I need your grace in this situation because you are angry.
So
are you conscious always of the grace of God?
Well, I'm not sure I'm always conscious.
Okay. I'll give you a little bit more information on my situation, because Philip is obviously involved in this. Well, I don't think it's unreasonable to say this. But on the at the LLC, which is the Leadership Learning Community, Leadership Learning Community, there was a bit of a moment where me and Philippa were prayed for at that end of the room, and somebody gave us a picture of the three-chord strand is not easily broken. It's something from the Old Testament, I think. And it was basically saying, Philippa, Andy and Gord, you need to be wrapped up together, and, you know, you'll be stronger together. There's going to be obviously some tension, and, you know, you're going to need some strength. And so we accepted that little picture, and then everybody moved around. Me and Philippa and the other people who had been prayed for at this end of the room stayed put. People moved around. And then within 2 or 3 minutes, there's another image exactly the same for us, three-chord strand. So you think, God's saying it, and then he's underlining it. And so I'm actually using that, me and Phil are using that to pray in the mornings. And, you know, Phil's just been working her guts out at school, you know, and she leaves home at 7:20 in the morning. And then comes home at 6:30, and then continues working till 10 at night, you know, because of all the assessment stuff. So she's, but I know that, you know, operationally, you know, with this sort of stuff, I need to help her. And I'm trying to step in and help. So in the morning, I'm getting up, and, well, I always get up anyway, but you know what I mean. I'm getting up, and there she is. She's ready to go out the door. And I say, let's just pray, Lord, you know, give us a day today. Help us through today. And we're dealing with this bitterness issue as well. I've tried to identify that. I'm not sure if she's in agreement with me, by the way. But, you know, we're just praying through it because, you know, she's having to think about it, I think, over these last couple of weeks. So we're just praying, God, help us. And that's really what grace means, is help. Okay, so stay in the help of God and stay praying. So some of you have mentioned praying, you know, Simon and you know, so I said, well, you've got to stick in it and then ask God for help, yeah? And that's where we're at. So doing that and also trying to forgive people. So I can't forgive my dad for dying. That's sort of a natural process, isn't it? But I can. So I'm just talking about things that are pertinent to me now. But, of course, there are other issues, like your brother keeps smacking you on when you're, you know, I read up about this, you know, because I never did that to my sister. I never hit my sister, of course. You know, and your natural reaction to whack back again, and there's a forgiveness issue going on there. And then we've got other ones of the children as they're growing up, as teenagers. How do we react to them? We've got to forget. And one of the things that I found as a young parent was that Philippa would say, you've got to say sorry to the children. And I never had that happen in my life. My parents never apologised to me, and I didn't think I was supposed to. And I've discovered this whole thing is actually it increases the relationship with your children. If when you've obviously made a mistake, you apologise. And then, you know, forgiveness can happen and the whole thing rolls on. So, you know, I've lived and learned as I've gone on. So I hope there's somewhere there. It's all going a bit... Oh, yeah. Sorry, I've got the... We do not want to end up bitter and twisted, do we? Well, I don't. You know... And religious people are the ones that are most likely to, so watch it. Okay, I'm trying to watch it for myself because, you know, it's you can get hung up on things. This holy business, by the way, I just wanted to... I don't want you to get hung up on that holy because I could. Jesus was our example about being holy, and it said he was the guy who came eating and drinking. Okay, he didn't sin, but he went to parties. He offended the religious folks, but he had a purpose. Just a couple of little things about Jesus. So he was a guy who was holy. He offended people, particularly religious people, but, you know, he took the rap for it as well. But he also went to parties, and he made the parties better. And he, you know, and he was known for being a drunkard. Now, I'm not sure he was a drunkard, but that was the accusation put to him. Because he drank, so, you know... He was eating and drinking and going to a lot of parties. And he was holy. So I thought, I'll leave you with that because it's something you have to work out as how you are holy and actually living a human life as well as forgiving. It's complicated, but fun. Well, I don't know where the fun is, really, sometimes, but it is fun. I'm sure it is at the parties. Okay? I think that's rolled it up, I think.
Andy, here's another way of looking at that, falling short of the grace of the God. Falling short of the grace of God. A way of recognising that we want to be in a position where we can accept God's grace. So we need a soft heart and a soft attitude to accept that, rather than something where we've got a bitter heart where we're saying, I know this is good for me, but I'm not having it, which is then where we're falling short of God. So to remain long in the grace, we want a soft enough heart and a soft enough attitude that whenever God comes along and says, I can help you, or you need my help, we're in a position to say, it might not be what I want to do, but yes, I need your help, and I'm going to accept it.
Yeah. What do you want me to say? Yes. Sounds good.
And on that night, good night.
Yeah. Good night. Right. It's still midday. So.
I'd say what we ought to say is if you've found that, and as Andy has taught, you've said, yeah, I'm bitter, then you may need more prayer later, but try not to go out of that room without asking somebody to have a quick prayer for you, at least, to start the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I feel I'm doing. I'm actually starting the process with Philippa, and we're just trying to pray and stuff like. I wonder if one of us has been to the prayer table about it. Probably we have. Not me, though. Yet. So, if anybody would like prayer about that, that's cool.
Get somebody to pray for you before you go, if you're in that position.